AETC.org. Hope, any last words?
Yes, stay well out there, folks, and continue taking the steps to keep yourself and your loved ones healthy. That includes exercise, a good diet, and seeing your healthcare provider regularly.
And protect yourselves and others by getting the COVID-19 vaccine, wearing a mask, and social distancing wherever possible. As an infectious diseases doctor, I also want to share with the healthcare providers in our audience that the HIV Care Tools app was recently launched by the AIDS Education and Training Center, the AETC. And it's a fantastic tool for ensuring your patients have access to the best standard of care. I encourage you all to check it out. And remember, health is a human right.
KBOO's end of year drive is happening right now. We invite you to become a member today by going to kboo.fm/give or by texting KBOO to 44321. Contribute now through December 31st and your donation will be matched dollar for dollar up to $10,000 thanks to the generous support of the Ronnie S. LaCrute Fund of the Oregon Community Foundation. Join the KBOO family today at kboo.fm/give.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Labor Radio of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm your host, Stephen Siegel, here with co-host Rachel Haynes. Hey, Rachel.
Stephen.
We are broadcasting around the world from teachers, and we host every second Monday of the month, where we typically interview educators and talk about what's going on in their schools and in their unions. Joining us today in the Zoom is Angela Bonilla. Hey, Angela.
Hi, Stephen. Hi, Rachel.
It's so good to have you here. So, Angela, I've known you for a little bit, but tell the audience about your teaching background.
Yeah, so I started in education working in early childhood. So I worked with infants and toddlers and developing curriculum and bilingual curriculum for that work. I started working at Portland Public Schools as an education assistant in 2015, and then was part of the Portland DLI teacher residency program. And so I started working in the classroom as a fourth grade Spanish immersion teacher back in 2016. And from there, I've worked at as a sixth grade self-contained teacher. So I taught all the subjects to middle schoolers. And now I am an instructional specialist. All of this was in mostly elementary schools, all Title I or CSI schools.
CSI. Crime scene? No. What is CSI?
I believe it's Comprehensive School Improvement, but okay. I am going to have to look that up.
Yeah. Okay. But what inspired you to go into teaching? It sounds like you started out as an assistant, but what inspired you to go into education?
Yeah. So when I was, I'm originally from the Bronx, New York, and I went to public school. And when I was around 10 in fifth grade, I was nominated and accepted into this program called Prep for Prep. And what Prep for Prep does is find students who are gifted in public schools, provide them extra schooling and then scholarships into independent schools. So after doing that, I ended up at a private school, the Calhoun School in New York City. And it's one of these progressive education schools. When I was there, the building didn't have walls inside of the building, so you could hear what everyone else is doing.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of project-based learning. And as I was going through that schooling, I started having that, you know, the guilt of being a person of color who was pulled out of their community to go into this mainly white affluent space and having to, you know, carry all the weight that comes with that as a representative and having to constantly prove myself. And while doing my work there and really getting a sense of who I was as a human and who I wanted to be, I realized that a big part of what I saw myself as being is someone who is advocating for others and pushing for change. I really thought it wasn't fair that I got to have this amazing education and all the other students in my classroom when I was 10 weren't allowed access to that, especially still living in the same neighborhood and seeing those students getting involved in crime and gangs and other things and just knowing there wasn't much to separate me from them. And so I decided to go into education as a way to try to bring what I got at private school into public schools, because that's everyone deserved the education that I got. So yes, that's how I got started.
Great. And then in addition to your work in as an educator, you play a role in your union. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I wear a lot of hats. I'm currently on the union bargaining team. I am also on the advocacy committee, which is where we review exceptions to our contract and really ensure that our contract is being followed by the district. I am also on the executive board. So I am the liaison to our Outer Northeast schools and am the liaison also to the bargaining committee within our union.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, you know, we wanted to have you on to talk specifically about what's going on in Portland Public Schools and with your union. But maybe just start out, could you tell us how things are going for you personally as an educator? It sounds like you don't have your own classroom this year, but how's it going for you and what are you seeing from other educators in your workplace?
I think for me, I'm doing okay. Not having a classroom is a big change, but it is also a very big privilege. I get to just ask teachers, what do you need, and do that for them. Because my time is not structured around the little humans in front of me and having to be present and ready and prepped for them when they get there. I really love what I do because I get the time and opportunity to really think bigger picture, like what, you know, my time is limited just like everyone else's. So I want to make sure that I'm putting that time into what can be the most impactful for the most people. And that just means that I get to listen to teachers and hear what they need and try to make that not just here's an email for you, but how do I make that into a system, a template, something that I can share with others. And what I've been hearing from teachers is just the need for more time. Right now at our school, we lost our administrator. And so both of our administrators were teachers who moved out of the classroom within the last year into that administrative role, and mostly driven because they loved that school and they wanted to ensure that the work we were already doing wasn't derailed by a new administrator trying to prove themselves to the district or whatever they might be doing. And so we're doing mostly okay, but teachers still need a lot of time. We have two new curriculums at our school, one for literacy and one for math. And we have not had enough time to go through all the materials and unpack them. I mean, I have boxes and boxes in my office of curriculum because teachers literally have not had time to open up every single box. There's also, you know, the COVID concern always ever present, right? Like I do recess duty, and how do you keep students who are from 5 to 11 away from each other and keep them 3 feet apart with their masks over their nose while they want to socialize, right?
Duct tape, right?
Yeah. So it's there's a lot of like, we're pushing through, we're doing what we know how to do, while also that constant nagging in the back of your head of like, is this safe enough? Is this going to impact their learning? Is this going to impact their social emotional needs? Am I doing enough? Am I doing enough over and over and over again?
So that kind of brings us to this other point of teachers across the country are leaving the profession in droves, and PPS is facing a crisis of understaffing. So maybe you could talk a little bit about that understaffing, like how that presents in the our district. And then also, what do you think is making this year so much more difficult?
So in terms of understaffing, what's really important for folks to know is that it's not just teachers, right? So we have professional assistants, paraeducators who work specifically with students who have special needs. We have nutrition specialists who feed our kids, bus drivers who take our kids to and from school. And we are missing so many humans in all of those positions. And all of those things, you know, we already have a stretched, a district that's stretched thin when it comes to people power and resources. And when one of those pieces falls, it has a ripple effect. So for example, we had some positions cut at our school this year, including a half-time special ed position. But we still have our intensive skills classroom with two paraeducators who are out on leave and no substitutes and no replacements. We have nutrition specialists who've been denied sick leave for having COVID. And so there are times where our interventionist has to go down to the cafeteria and feed kids in the morning to ensure that everyone gets breakfast so that they can get to class. And she also has to prepare because she's supposed to be supporting our highest need students that at that tier three level of reading instruction. And then when we have six educators out and only a 50% fill rate with substitute teachers, I'm in a classroom, the interventionist is in a classroom, we're asking if people are willing to give up their day of instruction that they've planned on as an ESL teacher to go into a classroom because there just aren't enough bodies. And our administrators are also doing a lot of work trying to fill those gaps. Our administrator is pulling funds to give everyone an unpacking day once a month. The problem is, will we have enough guest teachers to cover that? Will we be able to actually go do the work that we need to do in understanding what we need to teach and keep our kids safe and learning while we're not there? So the lack of staffing has been very difficult, and it has a ripple effect across the whole school.
And do you think that some of the issues that are arising around you know, the ability to keep our school staffed and also just the kind of pressure and stress that teachers are under, are these all related to COVID, or do you think there's more to the story?
Oh, there's definitely more to the story, right? I mean, we, having worked in only feminized professions, jobs that were historically for women, I am used to being underpaid and overworked. And that is not any different when we talk about education. We have we've had so many issues for so long of underfunding, of, you know, people deciding that we're waiting for Superman. And so we're gonna decide what students need and what teachers need without listening to students or teachers. The lack of power within our schools to support our students the way we know they need to be supported and to interact with our communities the way that we know they need support has been stripped away piece by piece over the last 20 years. And when you have this kind of push to privatization in schools where everyone who's in charge has this like CEO style background, they want people who are going to be good business people in education, you inevitably are going to cause a crisis, because public education is for everyone. Public school is for everyone. But when you have a business, you can decide, we're not going to serve that demographic. We're going to cut costs here. We're not going to do this. And we don't have that luxury in public schools. And so when you build a public schooling system that's based around test scores connected to funding, and then years after that, you have administrators saying, I'm the one who knows everything about what needs to happen in the school. I don't need to spread that leadership around. You end up with a profession that folks don't want to join and don't want to be a part of and don't want to continue working under. And so this crisis has been building for a while. What COVID did was shine a light on those cracks and make them bigger, right? So a lot of our substitute educators were retired educators. When we have COVID attacking and most impacting our elders, those folks are not going to come in and substitute for us because it's literally life or death before we had vaccines and still afterwards. And that's still continuing. So I think what COVID kind of let us know, and or what COVID did was tell the rest of society, here's everything you expect from schools, and now schools are closed, so what do we do? And then we reopened and said, we're gonna just keep going like we were going before, while also trying to ensure no one gets sick at school. So the education profession has been in a bleak place for a while. And I think COVID just really pushed us to the point of having to make some very real, serious decisions about what we value in our society.
So I know that you are a member of the bargaining team, like you told us, and you're currently bargaining, or PAT is currently bargaining workload relief with PPS. What are some of the specific ideas that PAT is bringing to the table? And conversely, what is the district bringing?
Yeah, so our bargaining team is proposing for elementary and middle schools having two extra professional development days to support climate work within our schools right after winter break, as well as planning days at the ends of the quarter and the semester, in order to make sure that we have enough time to plan instruction, grade all the work that we have to grade, and be able to provide students the kind of education they need. And in addition to that, for elementary and middle schools, we're asking for a 2-hour early release once a week, every week, in order to do the things that we can't do while we're in the middle of serving students, like communicating with parents, preparing materials, collaborating with other professionals in the building to ensure that we're providing all the services we need to provide to every student. For high schools, we are proposing 1 day after winter break, and still those days around the grading periods, the end of the grading period, but we're also asking for flex time, a full day of flex time during the week. And so for PPS, flex time and tutorial, what that means is it's a day where students don't have official classes, but they would have time to meet with teachers, to make up work, to do their homework, to ask for support, and also time to meet with other professionals in the building that they might not have time to meet with during the week. And we know that students have been asking for more tutorial time for a while now. And so we hope that this proposal can support not just what teachers need, but what we know students are saying they need too. PBS's proposal was three days of adjusted learning between now and the rest of the school year. So no professional development or ongoing support, but 1 day a month for 3 months, where half of the day we're working with students in some social emotional learning. And then we would have office hours and a little bit of prep time at the end of the day. And what we know about SEL and most things that the district asks us to do is that we don't always have the materials we need in order to do that work. So we have said several times that if you want us to do SEL, you need to teach us how to do SEL. And that needs training because this is very important work. And if we are being asked to do this haphazardly once a month for 3 months, we're going to also have to prepare for that. And so it's another workload piece being put on us under the guise of relief.
All right. Well, if you're just joining us, you are listening to KBOO Portland. This is Labor Radio. Also, I want to let you know that KBOO does not take corporate money for advertising. We rely on you, our listeners, for sustaining us financially. So please go to kboo.fm/give. Yep, that's kboo.fm/give. Got it? And that's where you can donate and support our show and a lot of other amazing shows. So, Angela, how has Portland Public Schools been communicating with families about the bargain? And how are you feeling about the communicating that they've been doing?
So Portland Public Schools often communicates with parents and doesn't send that information to the educators. So we end up finding out through educators who are also parents or parents who are concerned and bring it to their teachers. For this bargain, in the middle of our bargaining, we had the district send out notification to parents as well as put it on Twitter, their interpretation of our proposal. And in their interpretation, they told parents that we are asking for a day off a week. We want a 3-day weekend. They were telling parents that we want 20 days off a year and we want students to have less instruction. And they were telling parents that we were trying to push to a return to something similar to comprehensive distance learning. We want to send kids home and have them do work independently without any support. And the difficult part of that kind of communication, which was very anti-union, anti-teachers, to the point where parents were like, what is going on? They weren't paying attention to bargaining, and that email made them want to pay attention to bargaining. I think the problem with that communication is that it was mostly false, a distortion of what we were doing. And they have the power to spread their information across every parent, towards every parent in the district. While our communication is primarily with teachers and educators, and then we push it out from there. It's difficult seeing their framing when we come in with a written proposal. They don't have a written proposal, but they have time to do interviews and write press releases that are false. In my opinion, I felt really frustrated and I really questioned what is PPS's purpose if it's not to serve our students when they come to the bargaining table without a proposal, but are willing to get onto the news and put out on Twitter that teachers are trying to take learning away from your students, quote unquote.
Mm. Yeah. And what do you say to parents who are concerned about proposals that include increasing time that their children are at home?
Yeah, this past year was really difficult for parents. I know that I am not a parent, but I know that it was very difficult because it's difficult for teachers to manage a class of 27 students, right? And we have expertise and training, experience. Now, imagine being a parent that is not your training, that is not your expertise. You have another job, and now you have to care for your child at home and hope that no one around you gets sick. So I know last year was extremely difficult. What I also know is that we have a lot of students who need a lot of support. And usually teachers can kind of support students at their level in the classroom, and it's only a couple of students who need, you know, really intensive interventions. This year, we're noticing that that's kind of flipped on its head. We have more students who need more than ever before. And unfortunately, we're not getting enough planning time to do that. So what I want parents to understand is that our schools are not working. They have not been working for a while, but we as educators constantly try to mitigate the harm. And we want to ensure that we don't harm our kids or their families with all the harm that is coming from the district towards us in our classrooms. But this year we don't have that option because there is so much need. And with the lack of staff, it's become unsafe to be at schools. We've seen this at schools that have had to close down due to safety concerns. We've seen riots in middle schools. We have schools going into lockdowns because students are assaulting other students across schools. Schools are not safe. And with so many kids needing so much and then staff not being available to support them, the only way that we can get kids the help they need is to create time. And the only way to create that time is to ask families to support us by having their students home for 2 hours at the end of the day for our elementary and middle school students once a week, and allowing students at that high school level to get more support and support in a way that's individualized. I think we also need to remind families that, you know, we have to serve all of our kids. Again, public school is for everyone. So even if it doesn't feel like it's that bad at your school is part of our public school system, and we need to make sure that everyone gets what they need. That's what equity and fairness means. It means that everyone gets what they need.
So we have only a little bit of time left, but I kind of wanted you to address, if you can, that several people in senior leadership have left or are leaving PPS. And how do you think this adds to the challenges that district is currently facing? And also, do you see that in bargaining, like having an influence in bargaining?
Yes. Anyone who's worked for Portland Public Schools or attended or has children at Portland Public Schools knows that our central office has a revolving door. We do not have central office staff who have stayed in the district, and often our district is seen as a stepping stone to a larger district because we're a mid-sized city. What is most impactful to bargaining is that right now we have, I think, 6 members on our bargaining team from PAT and 3 from the district. And one of them has already decided to resign and is moving to another position effective January. So it doesn't feel like the district is taking our proposals and our needs and our students' needs seriously when the people they send to the table are people who are not going to be here during this crisis and who will not, who don't have a vested interest in our success as a district, as a school, as educators. So, you know, when you have central office folks who put up proposals and say, this is how we're going to solve this problem. We're going to do this with this curriculum. We're going to implement this new initiative. And they leave in a year or two. What you're left with is educators on the ground trying to make these things work because in theory, they're what's best for kids. But in action, they're not being executed that way. And then we try again next year. And we restart that in 3 years. And our kids deserve better than that. We deserve people invested in our schools and in our district.
Well, we have run out of time, even though we have more questions for you. Thank you so much, Angela, for your insight into what's going on in PPS. Thank you for joining us on KBOO. Thanks to Jamie Partridge for helping us convert this to a radio-ready file. Thank you, audience, for tuning in tonight. Thank you, Stephen. This is Rachel Haynes. You've been listening to Labor Radio. Tune in next Monday and every Monday at 6 to catch another Labor Radio show.
To you, the 9-to-5er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
KBOO, Portland, Oregon. Bridging the gap between prisons, prisoners, and the community. This is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
You're listening to Prison Pipeline here on KBOO Community Radio. I'd like to remind you that this is a great time to become a member of KBOO. Show your support for Prison Pipeline and for KBOO by becoming a KBOO member today. Just go to kboo.fm/give. Help us meet our $45,000 end-of-the-year drive goal. We're community-funded radio, so we need your support to get there. just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44-321.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh, Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Good evening. You are listening to Prison Pipeline here on KBOO Community Radio. Tonight we're talking with Zach Whalen. Zach, welcome to Prison Pipeline.
Yeah, thank you, Emma. It's great to be with you.
Thanks. So Zach, can you tell me a little bit about your organization and what you do?
Yeah, so our organization is called Project Avery. We're a nonprofit organization, and we focus on serving children with incarcerated parents. And we began in 1999. We began in Northern California at the prison called San Quentin State Prison. It's right in the San Francisco Bay Area. And the prison chaplain at that time, a man by the name of Earl Smith, he lived on the San Quentin campus. And he got concerned by seeing the kids line up each weekend to visit their dads. And he was seeing generational patterns form where he would see these kids and then years later, they would become inmates themselves in San Quentin. And so Avery was formed by Earl and other community members to intervene and to support these kids to help them break free from the intergenerational cycles of incarceration. And that's how we began. And